Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to the Ghost Bunny Podcast. I'm your host, Bridget Marquardt, with a brand new episode for you. My guest today is Kim Sage. Kim Sage is a compassionate psychic medium who brings comfort, closure, and healing by reconnecting people with their loved ones in spirit. Alongside her readings, she mentors as a teacher in metaphysical studies, helping others grow their own intuitive gifts. Certified in grief coaching, Kim is also currently studying grief counseling and funeral celebrant to further support those on their healing journey. She's looking forward to offering these additional services alongside end-of-life support in the upcoming year. In addition, she explores her curiosity for the unseen as a paranormal investigator, a passionate hobby that complements her spiritual work. I'm so excited to talk to Kim today. Kim, thank you so much for doing the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. So I wanted to start out because I don't know if everybody knows this listening out there, but you were on our trip with us. We just were in Lilydale. And then we went to, well, we did all kinds of stuff, but let's just start with Lilydale because you were there and you were assisting Tawny with her courses and her workshop there.
Yeah.
Tell me how you met Tawny.
So what was it? 2023. Yeah. 2023. I had done some of Lisa Williamson's paranormal classes before, but Tawny was a master teacher from Lisa, and she was doing her own intuitive paranormal investigations. And I was like, well, that's really cool because I kind of do that with my team as well. So I love, even though I teach too, I'll always be a student. So I love learning other people's techniques and all of that. So I was in her class. It was like a 6-week class, I want to think. We met once a week and, you know, on Zoom, all we could see is our little boxes and all. And it was really cool. And then it ended. And about 2 months later, I get this random message from Tawny. And she was like, hey, so you were in my class. And I'm teaching a class in Lilydale. And Spirit asked me to ask you to help. And I was like, okay. I can't make this up. So I was so grateful and obviously said yes. And so last year was our first year together, and it was just great. We work really well together and off of each other. And last year was just us two, and we were able to, gosh, I think the Saturday night we had like maybe 40 plus people at one time. And just between the two of us, we were able to tour everybody, and everyone had a great time and all of that. So this year was like a repeat of that, but we were able to have y'all join in, which was an added bonus.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was my first time in Lilydale, so I was super excited to be there and explore everything. And we got to go over, and I'm keep blanking on the name of the hotel across the street from Lilydale. Start with an L.
Leowin?
Like that. And so we were like the first ones that ever got to go and investigate over there.
That was really neat. That, because from what I understand, they have let some paranormal investigating in Lilydale, but it's still pretty rare. Last year when we did it, I remember going in the octagon and we had to basically explain to Spirit how to use the tools that we had, like how to use them. And you could kind of tell that it hadn't really been investigated. So as time has gone on, I can tell that they're much more engaging now. But being in that location, that was pretty neat. For being the first time and having the group that we did, we had a really great group of people.
Yeah, I have two things about that. Number one is I think that's something as paranormal investigators that we forget sometimes that the other side doesn't necessarily know how these tools work. And so if it's a place that hasn't been investigated before or in a really long time, or I mean, it's a good idea to kind of explain why we're there and what we're doing and what these things mean and how they can use them.
No, I
And
agree. I don't want to go in and assume, and I'm still trying to figure it out. That's why I love the paranormal. Like, we don't know everything that they know. I feel like we're not going to know until we pass over, but trying to figure it along the way, but just treat them with respect and explain, like, this is why we're here. Don't mean harm, and this is what we're using. I know it can be loud, because sometimes I've noticed too, locations with the louder the tolls, they don't like them. And so, but so yeah, just kind of going in and introducing ourselves and what we're doing.
Yeah, it's kind of why I like the dead bell and stuff like that too, because, well, depending on who you're trying to talk to or communicate with, that might be something that they are familiar with, like the bell, like that. And that's something that they feel comfortable with. So I like it when things kind of resemble old-fashioned type of things where they might have actually used that in their lifetime.
Yeah, I actually had
But
a Oh, sorry. I had a REM pod that
Well,
was shaped like a candle. I thought I had it close to me, but I don't.
oh yeah, those are cool too. I like those. Those are really cool.
Just
But
the
back to that
historic
hotel.
looking.
Yes. But back to that hotel. So the first floor, they rent out rooms. It's very, I forget what year that hotel was built, but it's
Oh
very
gosh.
old.
Yeah, I want to say it's I don't know if it's around the same time that the Maplewood was built, but around the same time frame.
And they use the first floor, but there are floors above that were in a fire. And so they don't let anybody upstairs,
Which
typically.
I had no idea. So you'll have to divulge how that went.
It was incredible. So after everybody left, they let just like three of us upstairs. And, it was really amazing. The second floor, I think, is the one that had the most fire damage. And so it's basically just kind of like studs and like plywood flooring, and a lot of the old furniture and everything is in there. And it's just sort of a big open space. But then we went on to the third floor, and it was like a time capsule.
Wow.
Like, it looked like from the 70s, probably, maybe 80s was the last time that those rooms were used. And it was just so interesting being in there, and the old bathtubs, they were pulled out and stuff, but the old wallpaper, even just like the old staircase, like wooden, and it was just
Wow.
really, really interesting. And there's a seance room up there that some of the mediums would come over from Lilydale over to that hotel and do a seance in one of the rooms there. So it was still set up, like it was all blacked out with like the black bunting fabric, and the chairs were set up in a circle, and there were instruments in there for seances. So that was really cool.
What did it feel like when you walked in? Could you feel the energy shift or is it different?
On the second floor, it felt heavy to me. Like there definitely was something there. On the third floor, it just felt a little more nostalgic to me. Like, this is so cool. Like, I feel like we just walked back in time. And then we sat down in the seance room, and one of the ladies from Lilydale was going to start a seance. She's like, "Should we do one? We're here." And then my friend Elizabeth was like, "You know what? I think I'm out for that. Like, I'm gonna draw the line right there. Like, I don't know. That's just out of my comfort zone." And honestly, by this time, it was probably like 1 in the morning. I was so tired. And I told her, "You know what? As much as I want to do that, I just feel like I'll go back with Elizabeth because I just feel like I don't have even the energy to give for that." And then
And
everybody else
that's
is kind of like,
the thing.
I'm super tired too.
And that's a thing. So I remember y'all asking, and I was like, oh my God, I am tapped out. And Tawny was like, yeah, I'm good too. And I was like, okay, let's walk back together. Because it's just trying to hold space for everybody and engage and all. And plus being open while you investigate, that just drains you 10 times faster.
Yeah, I'm
But I would have
sure.
loved to see that. Maybe next year.
Yeah, definitely. And then we did like some fun stuff. We went to the I Love Lucy Museum, and that was fun. We went and saw her grave. And did you
That
guys
was
go
super
see the
cool.
statues?
Yes. That was
because
I took more pictures at the Lucille Ball Museum and around Jamestown than I did the whole trip.
That's so funny. And then Wildwood, and we went to Wildwood Sanitarium, but I'm dying to know what you thought of Wildwood.
So Wildwood, previously, so I'm on a team FPRI out of Fredericksburg. And so a few years prior, they went on this trip and I couldn't go because of health issues. So they virtually tapped me in. So I kind of already virtually had tapped into that location before. Definitely a lot going on. There's a lot going on there. Definitely felt layers. I kept picking up on a female on the top floor, but what was interesting is our team lead didn't even know that I was on the phone with one of my friends, and he was using, is it the Ovilus, the ones that the words pop up?
Uh-huh.
So he was using that in a different room, and the word medium came up while I was on the phone with her on another floor. So I thought that was pretty neat that popped up on the Ovilus, and he didn't know I was on there, but it was definitely, that was interesting. And then when we went in person, it really felt like they were following us, but at a distance. Like following us and kind of like peeking around the corner and like, what are they doing here? Are they here as a patient? Like, why are they here?
Interesting. Did you get the feeling that it was maybe the doctors?
I did. I felt most of the, I felt more of the patients and maybe like a few of the staff. I felt like maybe in the basement, I was picking up on one of the physicians. Especially when you were laying on the table.
Oh, you felt something? Oh my God. Just so the listeners know, there's an embalming table down in the basement and I laid on it for a photo.
Yeah. Yeah. And I felt like he was standing there watching you like, what is she doing?
She's not dead
yet. But it was just more curiosity. I feel like it was more curiosity. I didn't feel anything like heavy really, or just that. That area, I feel like the land in particular has so many layers of different activity and things that happen throughout the year or years in history.
Yeah. And then we ended our trip at the Hinsdale House.
Yeah.
Thoughts on the Hinsdale House?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
What are your thoughts on the Hinsdale House? What were you feeling there?
I'd like to go back. I was pretty apprehensive going. Before going to a location, I do my best not to hear anything, not to look up anything, not to know anything, right? So, but it kept coming up. Like, it kept coming up in conversations about things that had happened there and be mindful of this and be mindful of that, to the point where I was like, what am I getting myself into? So I decided to go in. I knew that there was a giving tree. And typically when I go on a location anywhere, it doesn't matter where I go, I usually bring tobacco or something to offer the land in gratitude for being there. So before we left Lilydale, I went in one of the crystal shops and just got, I think it was a piece of rose quartz, and brought it with me. So when we went there, that was the first thing I wanted to do, was to go up to the giving tree, just show my respects and offer the crystal and just kind of take in the energy. And just even standing up there, I felt like we were being watched, but not in a bad way. Just more of the energy of the land, or like the guardians of the land per se. I felt like they were just kind of watching us and observing. But yeah, so it didn't, right off the bat when I got there, I was like, okay, this is different than what I expected. But I still wanted to go in with no expectations and just kind of be open-minded about how the evening was going to proceed.
Yeah. And what were your thoughts?
It was, like I said, I'd like to go back. It was a lot of, it's just like it felt like an onion. It felt like we had to like peel back different layers, or like try to like the different pieces that go with it or fit and don't fit. And, you know, I was picking up on random things. I kept picking up on the Civil War, and I didn't know why, because I knew the Civil War hadn't been up there. But later I found out that a lot of the residents from that area and the neighboring towns actually, gave their men to the Union. So a lot of the residents there, left for the Civil War. But yeah, it just felt, like we were there to listen to a story.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And I get what you mean about wanting to go back, because it did feel, even though we were like, seemed like we were communicating and there was like seemed to be intelligent communication going on. It did feel a little incomplete when we left. Like, I felt like I didn't really still quite know what we were communicating with or who, or if we really were, like, I was still kind of questioning it, even though it did seem like it, like there seemed like we were getting like responses.
Yeah. But it was still kind of like, I don't know, at the end of the day, I don't know what that was. I don't know.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I know that there's a lot of different aspects on the property too. Like, there's the woman in white and there's the graves and there's like you said, the giving tree, and then there's the house. And I think there's just a lot going on, and maybe that's kind of it too. Like you're saying, layered, like there's just so many different aspects to it that one day or one night there is just like not enough. Like,
you not enough at all
to even remotely understand.
Yeah, and we've been going nonstop for like days before that. So to come there and our energy was already kind of tanked. I would have enjoyed staying longer, or maybe even arriving earlier, more early. Mm-hmm. One of my team lead, John, he told me that he got the most activity during the day while he was there. Because it did kind of get to the point in the night that like spirit was like, we're done. We're not talking no more. Like, because it was really active. And then all of a sudden it was like, okay, move along.
Yeah. And it felt like the energy left, like mm-hmm. it left all of us, but you felt like the energy left in the room too.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'd like to go back. I'd like to maybe have some more time, or go when I'm not so tired, so I can put more energy into actually investigating or kind of having more of a plan next time. It'd be interesting. I would definitely go back.
Yeah, you didn't. Only Tammy and I went in the basement. What did you feel in the basement?
So I definitely felt elemental energy on the land. Like, I definitely felt it in the woods. And I'm the type where I'm actually in a workshop now learning about elementals. They've come across my path the past couple of years, but honestly, I don't know a lot about them. So I err on the side of caution and just respect them, but kind of stay back because I want to be respectful and I don't understand them fully. So I don't want to poke the bear or anything of that. So I definitely felt there was something. The basement down there reminded me of the basement of the cabin on 360, which is a location in outside of Richmond here in Virginia. And it gave me that same energy where something elemental was down there. And I just didn't really have, I just didn't have no desire to go say hi.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Did y'all feel anything when you went down there, or was it just
I did not.
Yeah.
I did not. We went down there. It was kind of a damp basement. There was like a air thing to try and like dry it out going on down there.
Okay.
It was very like dirt floor that was a little bit damp. And then there was like a crumbled out piece of the wall where you could see into like another area underneath the
space. Yeah.
That looked a little bit creepy. So I put the camera in there to see if I could see anything. There wasn't really anything in there that we could see anyway.
Yeah.
And we tried a couple different things, including those new virtual reality goggles, paranormal goggles. And I had the SLS camera down there, and we tried communicating a little bit, and we just really weren't getting anything or feeling anything. So, yeah. I mean, Tammy and I are not psychic mediums at all, but you know, sometimes you still get that feeling like there's something here.
Yeah. I feel and we all have the ability. We all have those natural senses. So we all feel the energy shift when we go into a room And it could have been like, I've been on locations where it's typically active and it's just not as active, and it's just the day. It just, you never know when you go.
Yeah. And when, by the time we went down in the basement, that's like one of the last things we did. So it was late. It was after we already felt like the energy was kind of leaving.
Yeah.
So it could have been that too. It could have been that there was something in there, but it was like, good night. I'm going to bed. I'm going to bed. If you guys aren't coming down here, I'm going to bed.
Yeah.
Well, who knows? Okay, so let's talk about you being a psychic medium, though. When did you first, like, figure out that you had this gift?
Oh, gosh. I remember being a kid. I remember waking up in the middle of the night and feeling a woman standing over me, not quite understanding what it was or who she was, trying to make my way to my parents' room, like, waiting for that moment I could, you know, run down the hall and get in their bed. So that was pretty much my childhood. And we moved into the house I lived in now when I was 8. I actually bought my childhood home and live here now. And yeah, it was built by my dad and my grandparents and a lot of his brothers who are no longer with us. So it's kind of sentimental and having their essence and memory here too. But moving here, I don't know what it is with this land, but I remember my bedroom being like, I would have nightly visitors. I would have, I could see spirit clear as day, like you and I looking at each other, and that was normal for me, but yet I couldn't talk about it because no one really talked about it or believed in it. So I kind of just lived with it myself. But I caught on the habits of sleeping with the TV on, so I didn't feel like I was alone, or, you know, all of ours going under the blanket and hiding until, you know, it was away. So that was my childhood. And it really didn't bother me then. The part of it that bothered me was, I guess I was around 20. We didn't have really internet then. I started spontaneously astral projecting at night. I didn't quite understand what it was. I would like come to in my sleep and I couldn't move. You know, they call it like the sleep paralysis. But I would try to scream. I felt the floating. I could see myself under me. I didn't quite understand what was going on. So I went to the only metaphysical store in Richmond at the time. And I just happened to be talking to another customer in there. And he was telling me, yes, that's astral projection. That night, he came to me in my dream. The stranger. Yes. I was like, absolutely not. I'm not doing this. I don't understand it. It scares me. I felt violated in a sense because I was like, why would you do that? And so I kind of like shut it all down. I kind of like closed the door, said, I don't want to do it. And it was like that for another, probably till I was in my mid 30s is when I started opening this back up.
Okay. I need to go back to this astral projection thing because I've heard people can do it. My sister and my stepdad have had times where they have like had that type of situation going on. Like they think that they're dreaming it, but like, I'm like, wait, no, but that's a thing. I don't know if that's a dream, you know? And I've also heard that people can meet other people like that. You, like that guy came to your, into your room or wherever he was. I've heard that can happen. I've heard sometimes too that when we see ghosts, it could be somebody just astral projecting themselves into your space.
That's an interesting theory. I hadn't heard that. Yeah. But it is. I kind of want to dive into that next, like conquer my fear with education kind of thing. So I really want to kind of go into that and navigate that because I do remember certain dreams or while I was astral projecting, like I was meeting familiar souls that I don't know in this life, but they felt familiar and they're here in this world now. And because I remember saying, yeah, in this life, my name is Kim. What is yours? So we were like telling each other our names in this life. And so I woke up remembering that. And I was like, that's so bizarre. That's got to mean something.
It's fascinating, though. Yeah. And the fact that you were able to do it before, I bet that if you really wanted to, you could have that still. You could do it.
It's happened during, I've had a lot of major surgeries. So with anesthesia, I've actually like saw myself during surgery, saw myself on the table below and I was like floating above. And and I worked in the hospital for a couple of years and some anesthesiologists would tell me that they hear it all the time, that they hear patients talk about astral projecting or seeing themselves during surgery.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me, my grandma, she's passed away now like a year ago, but she told me that when she was in labor, I forget which kid it was, but she saw herself from above in the hospital room. Like she was looking down on herself.
Wow. I believe it. I believe it. I don't know how it happens, but it's pretty profound.
When you were astral projecting, did you happen to notice or know about anything like tethering you back to your body, like they say that there's a line?
It's interesting. Then when I did it, I could always see that my cord was like silver. And I was like, oh, that's cool. So I grew up not really religious. My parents never really took me to church, but I always believed in God. Like from a kid, I would just talk to him. I always felt that connection. I always knew he was there. And so when I started opening up and walking this path again, I actually gained a relationship with God. And now when I spontaneously astral project, I look down one time and my cord is gold. So it was pretty neat that, and gold for me is a color representing the divine and divine connection and God, universe, like all. So it was really interesting to see like it had changed because my relationship had changed.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now that you're back in the house, do you still see things? Do you think it's like a portal of some sort, or like, what do you think is going on there?
I feel like I am just like a wayside. I feel like I'm just like a stopping point. We kind of have this agreement of, yes, we were just going to cohabitate, but leave my bedroom alone because I like to sleep. Okay. So my bedroom is like my safe space. Every now and then I have to remind them of that. But it was funny because when I had major surgery a couple of years ago, I had to sleep downstairs. And because I had to sleep downstairs, I was trying to go to sleep and I would just hear them walk around all night, up the stairs, walk around, but I couldn't say anything. So we had that agreement, right? That they left me alone in my bedroom and I was in their space. So, yeah, I've never really had any issues since. We kind of just, sometimes they get a little active with lights and things like that. And my husband will look at me and he's like, honey, tell him this, like, stop it. Tell them to simmer down. Yeah. But other than that, we haven't had anything like scary or anything like that.
When you were younger, did your parents, I know you said that they weren't really into it and you didn't really talk about it with them or whatever, but did they ever confide in you that they experienced anything or any siblings or anything?
Yes, my brother. So my middle brother, David, we had no idea that we were both experiencing the same things at the same time and both not talking about it until probably we were in our, probably like when I started this path and I became more open with it. Then he came open with me and we were both like, wait, you heard that too? Or, you know, you experienced that too? So the whole time we had both been experiencing things. And my mom said that she would notice things too. But she just never talked about it, you know, cause back in the 80s and 90s, like unless your family was really open to it, you didn't really talk about it.
No, I know. Cause my first experience happened back then too. And everybody was just like, what are you talking about, ghosts? Yeah. That's just a weird, like who talks about that? Like, and who experiences stuff like that? Yeah. Like it wasn't talked about. And I've said a million times on here, like my family was like, well, clearly she either needs to go talk to the pastor of the church or a psychiatrist because there's not ghosts. Like, give me a break.
Yes. No, I get it. I get it.
Ghosts. What is this? That's only in movies.
Yeah, right. Poltergeist. Like we had all those beautiful movies for our youth.
Speaking of poltergeist, I just have to tell you really quick. I was just not last night, but the night before and the night before that at the poltergeist house.
I remember we talked about it briefly. So how was that?
It was incredible. I'll have to tell you, I'm going to do a whole podcast about it. So I'll have to tell you separately, but yeah, it was really, really amazing.
I can't even imagine. Cause that land too feels like it has layers. Like it's has those layers of energy.
In the movie, it was built on, you know, a cemetery that the tombstones had been moved, but in real life, supposedly, that was Chumash Indian land. Or Native American land. And so, I mean, I feel like anytime there's any kind of Indian or Native American correlation, like anything could have been a burial ground. You know, like there's, I don't know that they had like specific, I mean, I don't know. That's what they say. That's what they say was there. So I'll go with it. I don't know the history of that area or what was there before anything else. But then also in the house, obviously there's the whole filming that like the tragedy and the curse that follows the filming, like five people from the film have passed away and some of them very tragically and suddenly. And then the house itself is like, I don't know, 40 or 50 years old. And so there's been like three deaths in the house that were just family related. Like I guess two men and one woman. So there's all of that going on. And then who knows what else, you know, but that's what we know of. I'll tell you all about it after. Cause it was, It was really cool. Let's see, where am I on my notes now? How did you, like, okay, so you decided to embrace being the psychic medium skills that you had. How did you, like, cultivate that?
So I actually came to a part of my life. I've met a lot of mediums or spiritual people that kind of got into this when their life was at rock bottom. And my life happened to be at rock bottom. I'd been in a not healthy relationship, and I started noticing, actually towards the end of that, I started noticing knickknacks that my grandmother had given me before she passed. And she passed when I was 13. I started noticing knickknacks that she gave me that I had up on the mantle. They would move. They periodically move. And it's like she was letting me know that she was with me during all this that I was going through. And so my son had actually had a reading through a medium, and I listened to it, and she was bringing out people that he didn't know, my grandparents and all, he didn't know, but I knew. So I was like, well, she's the real deal. I was like, I need to go see her. I'd never been to a medium before that. So during the reading, my grandmother on spirit kind of told on me. She told the medium that, you know, she can do this, da-da-da. And at the time, this medium was actually teaching developmental classes, because I told her my fear. Like, I told her, I was like, I cut it all off because it scared me. And she was like, oh, I teach how to, like, turn on and off per se while you're working, so you're not constantly on. So I have more control. I have boundaries of working with spirit. And so that's really how that all just kind of started. And I never stopped. And that started about, I guess, 2017 is when I started that.
You are an evidential psychic medium. Can you kind of tell people what that means?
Yeah. So how I was trained was, when I connect with your loved ones, I have them blend with my energy, and I pick up on things to validate with my client. So I don't like to know anything when somebody sits in front of me. I wouldn't even know their name if I didn't have to. But certain things like health issues they could have had, how they passed away, the relationship to them, their personality comes through. Numbers will come through with, like, birthdays, you know, something significant like that. Memories, they'll bring up memories with their loved ones, specific things. So all of those are validating. And it kind of builds trust between me, my client, and spirit to, like, this is who we're talking to. And throughout the whole reading, they'll bring up things. And it's so beautiful to, even though I'm part of it, it's kind of beautiful to sit back and watch the healing happen and watch how it all works.
Yeah, for sure. And I was just looking at my notes too. You have that you are clairvoyant, so seeing, clairaudient, hearing, clairsentient, feeling, and claircognizant, knowing. I think that's so interesting, because a lot of people are kind of just pick one and be like, I'm just this.
Yeah. So when I first started my predominant one is claircognizance. So that's when you just know things. And I'll tell you, that's the toughest one, because you just know things. You don't know how you know it, but you got to trust it. And I tell people, like, as you develop the one that you're strongest with, the other ones, they open up too, and they'll start developing too. But during my readings, I'll tell people, like, it's like playing charades. I don't know how they're going to come through. Sometimes I have to look away because they're showing me images. So I kind of look away or glance away and let them do that. But I really know how, I don't know how they're going to come through until we kind of get in it and get into it.
Yeah. It's interesting because what you said about the knowing, because sometimes I will get what I call a download, and I just know something. Or I'll hear a situation, or I'll hear somebody say something or see somebody, and I'll just know something. And I know it with 100% certainty, but I can't ever tell anybody else that, because they'll be like, well, how do you know that? And I'll be like, I just know it. And they're like, well, did she tell you? No. Well, then you don't know that. No, but I do know. I do know.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. And I found the more that you act on it, the stronger it gets. So it's only in the environment that I do readings that I really are able to grow it. Cause you're right. Like in real life, we can't walk around. Well, I don't walk around and just, like, blast that I know these things.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a really interesting one with one of my best friends who I, Holly, who I, like, she was dating some mystery guy, and I don't even ask her, like, who that is. Like, people probably think that that's not true. Like, I must know all about that, but I really don't like try to interfere or like get nosy about all that kind of stuff. And because I knew she was being super hush hush and private about it too. So like, I don't want to be the one who knows and then it gets out and then it, who told, and then, you know, fingers are pointed at me. But one day I just had a download. And I saw who it was. I saw an interaction that they had. I saw the location. I could feel how he was feeling. I could feel how she was feeling. I could see how they were interacting together. I saw everything. And I was like, I sent her a voice text. And I was like, okay, this is going to sound really, really weird. And if it's not who this is, I'm just being weird then. But like, I think it's this person that you're dating. And this is somebody I would have never in a million years have thought. Not in a million years. And she was like, oh my God, no, you're right. Well, how do you know that? And she was like freaking out. And then I told her the interaction that I saw. And then she was really freaking out because that really happened. And like, weird.
Yeah. Sometimes I found it easier just to tell someone I had a dream because everyone pretty much is okay with hearing that you had a dream. Yeah. But my closest friends, I will freak them out. My closest friends, I'll all of a sudden see them in my head and I'll go to call them or something, but I don't know that they were getting ready to call me. And they'll be like, oh my God, stop doing that. Stop freaking me out. I'm like, I'm sorry. It comes with the territory.
Yeah. Tell me about light work. What is that?
So that to me, I feel like I'm like an eclectic spiritual person, as in light work to me is using energy for healing. So I've learned all the different Reiki, Reiki 1, Reiki 2. I did master Reiki and animal, using healing for animals, which I love. And I would love to go to like rescues and stuff and just sit there and give Reiki to the animals. But yeah, so light work for me is being in service of others. So using what you've learned for the greater good.
Okay. And you said that you grew up in haunted houses. Is this the haunted house you're talking about, or were there others? This is the one.
This one in the original house I lived in was right outside. Which now I know it's right outside of Richmond, but now I know that the Civil War, it's very close to Verina. So the Civil War was very prominent in that area. And that was the original house that I would wake up and see a woman just sitting there staring at me. Or it's crazy because when I wake up, it happened to me in another house I lived in too. I wake up in the middle of the night and they're standing there staring at me like, what am I doing here? And I'm staring at them like, what are you doing here?
Yeah, well, it's that age-old question, like, which one's the ghost?
Yeah. The house, when I was a single mom, I lived in this home by myself, and it was this huge neighborhood. But again, a lot of it has to do with land. And my oldest son, I used to have to get in the bed with him and for him to fall asleep. And it got to be where I would fall asleep, too, sometimes. So one night, I woke up in his room, and I had this whole family. It must have been, like, 5 or 6 members. And they were all dressed in like, it almost reminded me of like pilgrimage or like period clothes like that with the bonnets and all. And they were just sitting there all staring at me like, and I woke up staring at them and then immediately closed my eyes and opened them and they were gone. But it was that moment of, I remember the young girl staring at me like, who's that? What is she doing here?
Yeah. That's such an interesting thing to me because it really does make me wonder, like, are they still living in their time period, you know? And it's like, I don't know. It's just so interesting. And who is haunting who?
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure it out because, like, when I do readings with private clients, I never feel like their loved ones are stuck or I feel like they come and go. And when we're on locations, it's like, is it soul pieces of them? Like, is it intelligent soul pieces that they left because of something traumatic where they are really attached to this area or what is it? That's the age old question, right? Like what are ghosts?
Yeah. The soul pieces thing makes sense to me. Like you leave a piece of your soul in different places and those are places that you can go back and revisit and see and, or visit people there or whatever. Like I think that's an interesting concept.
Yeah, because even now, like you and I, we could do soul retrieval work where we're calling back pieces of our soul that we've left in, you know, different situations and of our life. And it's kind of like bringing back your power too. So,
yes, I've heard about that. Yeah. So interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm curious. You did say that you went and saw the medium and everything, but do psychic mediums seek out the service of other psychic mediums?
Yes. Sometimes. Yeah, sometimes. Actually, right after we came back from Lilydale, because I've been a student of Lisa Williams, sometimes when she's doing certifications and stuff, she'll ask previous students to be sitters. Right. So I always put my name on the list because I'm like, if I can do it, I can do it. Like I'm always down for some kind of message for my own loved ones because people. Yes, I can see my loved ones like when I do meditation and stuff. But there's something about being able to hear from my loved ones from somebody else. Right. It's not in my head. It's not me. It's somebody else giving me evidence, like 100% evidence that it's my loved ones. So when we came back, I did it was a week later, I did a sitting for one of Lisa's students and, my dog came through and, oh my gosh, yeah, right. Like people's one thing, but my dogs and my animals are, yeah. And, she had me bawling, but the amount of evidence that she brought through, so I had a shirt covering up here. So this is actually my dog's nose. It's his boot. Yeah. And then that's his whiskers coming out in their flowers. So she couldn't see that. And she was, you know, my dog was bringing this up and bringing up the choices that we had to make. And she was just doing so much detail that, like, I knew without a doubt that my dog was with me. And I needed that. I didn't know I needed it until after it happened. Yeah. And I actually taught this past weekend, too. I teach intuition and mediumship, and I had a beginner's. And they had never done a reading before, but my student brought through my grandpa and validated this picture I had made. My middle son graduated the Army, and the Army has gone back to the World War II uniforms. So that was a uniform I have a picture of my grandpa in. So I took my grandpa's picture and I took my son's picture and did like a side by side. And my grandpa has been on spirit since I was 19 and I'm in my mid 40s. So, but he brought that up my student had no clue. She's not on my Facebook. She doesn't, you know me like that at all. And so, but to hear that too, yeah, it's just, it's what we need to, like, we need that every now and then too. For sure.
Yeah. That reminds me of when I had my reading done in Lilydale with Jan. She tapped into my dog and brought my dog, like, and my dog was like, there's things that she didn't even, you know, couldn't have known. And so I'm like, oh my God, it really is Winnie. And yes. I was crying so bad. Yeah, and then my grandpa came through and I was like, oh, okay, well, whatever. But what was Winnie doing?
Right. Yeah. Like, yeah, my loved ones came through too. But when Bailey came through, I was like, oh my gosh.
I was crying. It's really hard. Well, I think you kind of answered this next question, but like, I was kind of wondering, like, when you, do you ever have doubt? Do you ever wonder, like, am I really connecting or am I like, is this part of my brain that's just like making this up?
I find that actually more in the paranormal because I can't validate. The paranormal is harder for me to validate what I'm picking up and what I'm, especially unless I have somebody there that knows the history of the place or knows certain things that happen. The paranormal, I'm literally having to trust and just spit it out. But I feel with private readings, in the beginning, when we validate their loved ones, that builds the confidence and that builds it. And the more things that come out and resonate with them, I feel that makes the connection stronger and kind of builds that confidence too. Because when I get really blended, sometimes I'll bring through characteristics of their loved one. I freaked one client out because I laughed like her aunt. I didn't realize I'd laughed like her aunt. I'll start like tapping my knee and, you know, their grandma was like a nervous, you know, Nellie, and she always tapped her knee. So, when I'm really blended like that, I'll start picking up the physical parts too.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And then there's just like no doubt. Like, I feel like for me, like I get the downloads or whatever. Not that I'm a psychic medium, but like even when I get like a download, I'm like, but where did that come from? Like, did I just make that up? Was there something that she said that like I picked up on, didn't realize, and that's why I had that or whatever? But I feel like in your guys's case, it's like when you have so much evidential stuff, like there's no denying it.
Yeah. And you got it. At the end of the day, I feel like practice really helps with that too. Like the more you do, but being okay with repeating stuff that sounds absolutely crazy to you, because 9 times out of 10, it'll mean something to your client.
Yeah. You teach metaphysical studies. Where do you teach?
Oh my gosh. I teach intuitive paranormal investigating. So just going into an investigation and using our own senses. Which includes all the clairs. So the clairs are heightened senses of our regular senses. I teach psychic intuition, mediumship. I've done a little bit of shamanism. So teaching how to shamanic journey. So many different things. But other things too, like we do, like at the beginning of every year, we'll do a vision board. I do a lot of self-empowerment classes too, with like bringing back those soul pieces and kind of like bringing back our inner power. And I also have really gotten into, or I'd like to get into more grief work. So holding grief circles and helping people navigate that journey as well.
What would you say is the biggest piece of advice you would give someone wanting to grow their intuitive gifts?
Start with meditation, like learning. And I know I feel it when I tell people to meditate, right? I feel that because I get it. My attention span.
No!
I know, but my attention span is 10 minutes, if that. But that's really all it takes. And the reason I say that is because you really have to be able to hone in and quiet your mind so you can pick up on these things in everyday life. But also through meditation, that's where you can meet your spirit guides. I see my loved ones through meditation. I see my dog through meditation. So, you know, that's all possible. So it's beautiful to be able to have that inner relationship with our own team and loved ones with ourselves. But you can also use that as a good foundation to get started with growing your gifts.
Okay. You told me there was a story about one of your readings that said you were right.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So I usually don't talk a lot about my readings, but this one was really profound for me. So I was doing readings at Belgrove, and I didn't know at the time that my client's stepmom had just passed away 2 days prior. And so we were doing the reading. Everything was great. Everything was flowing. Her dad had come through and all too. And at the end, she threw the question on me and I was like, oh, good. And here we go. Test the medium. She said, she says, my stepmom should have something to tell me. What does she want to say? And instantly I'm left braining it, which means I'm overthinking it too much. And I don't want to do that because then I feel like I'm going to pull out too much. Right. So I'm just sitting there. I feel like I was starting to sweat. Like it was a whole thing. But I kept hearing this phrase, you were right. And I heard it again. And finally, on the third time, I just spit it out. That was one of those, like, just spit it out. So I just spit it out. I said, I keep hearing you were right. And she goes, do what? And I said, you were right. Bridget, she stood up, slammed her hands on the table and was like, oh my gosh. And I'm sitting there like, oh my God, what's going on? She said that her stepmom was terrified of dying, but she was so scared of dying that she was screaming and crying days leading up to when she passed. And she would hold her hand and she says, no, no, no. When you pass, daddy's going to be there. He's going to walk you over and you're going to pass with so much love, so much love. And she says, I'm going to go to a medium and you're going to tell me I was right. So her mentioning that, and I get chills every time I repeat that story.
I have chills everywhere.
Yeah. It was validation for me too, that it's always what I felt happened. And throughout the years, spirit has predominantly talked about the same process, but just to hear it and validate it through somebody's reading was really profound for me and so beautiful.
Definitely. Tell me about the grief coaching.
So the grief coaching is like life coaching, but the grief coaching is more about navigating, bringing more gratitude in for knowing your loved one. So starting to replace some of those holidays with bringing in more positive things. So like on their birthdays, going and doing something in memory of them that they would have enjoyed, like volunteering somewhere or getting their favorite food or still getting a cupcake. Like still celebrating them in some way, in a positive way. So it's like slowly navigating, just bringing more gratitude in and focusing on the gratitude more of them being in your life. For you to have been loved, you know, for you have to have loved someone so much that you miss them so much. So you were so grateful to have someone like that in your life. I'm currently going in school right now in community college for grief counseling. And so with that, I have to do an internship at hospice. So I'm kind of looking forward to see where that route will take me in the future.
Yeah. I have that you're studying grief counseling and funeral celebrant.
Yeah. Is that what? So that's doing a holding a funeral. So when you stand up and talk about the person and, hold space, but you're the person that like tells their story or, tells, you know, interviews the family and kind of writes the service.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I really, it pulls on my heart so much, Bridget, to kind of turn death into, I know death is sad and I know there's a huge loss, but I feel like it should be celebrated too. Like, I feel like that person's life should be celebrated. And I feel like, I feel like it should be more of a homecoming, or at least starting to turn that narrative.
Yeah. What would be the biggest piece of advice that you would give to somebody who's grieving?
Talk to their loved one. That is like the biggest thing that comes through in readings too, is spirits adamant with me telling their loved one, please tell them I hear them. Please tell them I hear them. And a lot of times that's what somebody needs to know. Like, it's kind of, it's telling too, because most of the times I can tell that they only talk to their loved ones in the car. So when I mention that, they're like, how did you know? Just keeping that connection, believing in the dreams. Dreams are the easiest way for them to come through and communicate with us. So believing when you see them and writing it down, like writing down your dreams will actually make your dreams become more clear and more profound. But I feel really just talking to them and then being open to the signs, like not feeling like you're crazy. If you see something and it keeps reminding you of a certain loved one. Mm-hmm. That's probably that loved one trying to come through and let you know that they're with you.
Yeah. I know that when I lost Winnie, I wrote her a letter. Kim, it was 17 pages long.
Aww.
I just wrote everything. Yeah. And then I also built her like an ofrenda. Like Tammy helped me figure out how to like do the whole altar and like all the pictures and what everything meant and stuff like that. And for some reason, that helped me so much.
I've got one. I call it my ancestor altar, but I have this desk and it's got pictures of my loved ones and it's got little things that they liked. And it's just honoring them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the letter writing. So the letter writing is a homework assignment. So Spirit loves to give homework too. So letter writing. So if you had lack of closure or there's healing that needs to happen there, or there was anything that you felt like you needed to say that didn't happen, you can write them a letter and then burn it when you're done. And then I've also learned that that's a really good exercise to do with people that are still alive too. Like things, you know, healing that needs to happen with them. Don't give it to them because sometimes it just doesn't work out that way, but just to get it out, get it out on paper and burn it to release it. We're not holding on.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
And then you wrote about end of life support. Is that kind of like being like a death doula?
So my intentions years ago when I got back into the health field is I wanted to go to school for RN to be hospice. But I had some health issues come through and I physically can't do that. So the end of life is predominantly for someone who knows that they're going to pass. So terminal illnesses and whatnot, and being able to help them Like, what do you want? How do you want me to hold space for you? Do you want music? Do you want like candlelight? But, you know, like they basically get to plan, but also I can help educate the process of passing. And it's also helping the one that's passing, but their family as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a hospice nurse on the podcast before, hospice nurse Julie, and it's so interesting. Not only the paranormal aspects of it, which we were getting into, but even just like the process of dying and how foreign it is to us, and it shouldn't be like it,
yes.
And how things seem really scary, like the death rattle and those kinds of things, but they're normal parts of dying, and that like people just aren't familiar with those kinds of things. But being a hospice nurse, like she sees it every day,
and yeah.
It's normal, and normalizing those kinds of things. So it's not so scary.
And when I worked in the hospital, I did bedside care. So I was a patient care tech. So I was very hands-on with everything that had to do with our patients. And I found sometimes when our patients would go on hospice, and I'm not here to judge, I don't know why, but sometimes nobody would come back. Their family would be with them. But as soon as they went on hospice, and it's probably because they couldn't handle it themselves, but nobody would come back, and that would really bother me. So I would go in, I'd take it upon myself to go in throughout the day, hold their hand, you know, and just tell them on the down low, it's okay to go. Like you're not alone. I'm here with you. Just trying to give them comfort in those last mm-hmm. moments. But it was very enlightening for me too. I kind of always felt that when somebody passes, you know, their soul leaves. And when I would go into the room to do, you know, after they passed the post-mortem care, you could feel it in the room. You'd walk in the room and there was nothing. There was no essence. There was no, like, you totally felt like it was just you in the room. And that can be a little uncomfortable. So I'd play music in my back pocket and just talk. I still talk. But it was, you go in and it was like they truly do leave.
Have you ever been in a room with somebody who's end of life and their loved ones that have passed are in there with them? Have you ever had any?
Yeah. That would happen a lot. And it would happen with our patients who has Alzheimer's or dementia too. And so some of the healthcare people would come in and they'd be like, no, stop. You don't see anybody. And I'd pull them off to the side and be like, don't do that. Like I feel like they probably do because they didn't know what I did on the side. But I'm like, they probably do. So if I was in the room, I would just go along with it. It was like Uncle Eddie one time. And I was like, what is Uncle Eddie doing? You know, blah, blah, just like carrying on the conversation. And it just, yeah, I totally believe that their loved ones start coming, becoming more present when they're getting ready to help them cross over.
I think so too. And there's so many cases of it. Even the hospice nurse I was talking to, and she's not like a medium or anything like that. She's like, I can't tell you. It's so common that they'll be like, oh, so-and-so is sitting here. And you're like looking over at the chair in the corner of the room being like, okay, sure.
But it's so beautiful though, to know that we're not alone. I find it beautiful.
I think so too. Even in my reading where my dog came back with Jan, she said that my cat Gizmo, who had passed before that, was there. And it's not even that. And she even acknowledged that they didn't necessarily get along that well in life, but that my cat was there waiting for her to help her cross over.
Yeah. I've seen that too in spirit, because they'll, you know, some of their loved ones will come through and they're like, they didn't get along in the living. And I was like, yeah, well, they showed up for you right now. So I can't promise they're going to stay together, but they're here at the moment.
Yeah, totally. Okay. I want to talk about Belle Grove before we run out of time, because I was excited for a second. I mean, I'm still excited about it, but I was excited for a second because I was in Virginia a million years ago and we went to a plantation. And it was the home of a president from before. And I was like, oh my God, I wonder if that's where I was. But I looked it up and it's not where I went. I went to Sherwood Forest.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and there's actually two plantations.
Oh, there is? Oh, now I don't know if I looked up the wrong one or not.
Two. Well, we'll find out. But it was originally owned. So there's two.
Okay. There's one tell me all about
over
it.
In the western side of Virginia, and the one that I'm connected with is on the more eastern side. So, but they were owned by the same family, and I'll explain in a minute. So Belgrove originally was formed, the land was formed around 1670, but fast forward to 1751, our fourth president, James Madison, was born on the property. So his mom, Nellie, was at the other Belgrove plantation across the way in the mountains, and there was some kind of epidemic happening at the time. So she traveled to the Belgrove at Port Conway, where her mother lived, and stayed there to birth Jimmy. And okay. So at that time, the house that is there now, it wasn't there. They used her mom's house and her uncle's house, the material from that, to start building what the mansion is now. Oh my gosh, it went through so many different changes of hands. It went through the Civil War. It went through, obviously it's a plantation, so it had slavery and a lot of not good things happened there. But the Civil War, it was occupied, we're thinking, by the Union. And that's why it's still standing, because the Union didn't shoot on it. It has connections to John Wilkes Booth. After he assassinated Abraham Lincoln, he came through Port Conway and took the ferry across the Rappahannock River. And soon after, the search team that was searching for him stopped at Port Belgrove and stayed and rested. The owners at the time, I believe it was the Turners, like, gave them food and let one of them sleep in the house to get rest. And then I think a couple of days later, Booth was found like 3 miles away up the road. After that, it's gone through many different hands, different, tobacco, corn. It was a dairy farm at one time. Fast forward to modern day, in the 80s, the Haas family from Vienna bought it and they renovated it. I believe they invested over $1 million to renovate it and bring it up to like standards with electricity, like all the electricity and all, modern times. But then it kind of just sat. I believe their original intentions was another house for their family to be able to go to in case there was like civil war in their own country. And then they wanted to do like a corporate retreat, but nothing ever panned out. So Michelle Darnell, she's the current caretaker and runs the bed and breakfast. She obtained it in 2011 and opened it in 2013 to the public. And since then, it's been a venue for weddings, for events. We host paranormal investigations there, too. And it's really starting to catch the eye of the paranormal. This past year, a bunch of other teams came in and have done events there as well. So there's a lot going on there.
Tell me what most people experience paranormal wise.
Oh goodness. A lot of hearing. One of my first experiences there was I was there for a class. So full circle, I went there to learn mediumship and all. And the first day I was there, it was like a gentleman leaned into my ear and breathed, which was really creepy. But so a lot of hearing happens there, a lot of seeing apparitions out of the corner of your eye or coming around the corner and seeing full blown apparitions. We've gotten quite a few Class A EVPs there. So that's where you hear all across the EVP. It's not like those hard ones where people are like, did you hear that? And I'm like, no, I did not hear that, but they're like clear. We've gotten pictures. It can be quite active. But like all locations, I have found like some days are like real active and some days it's real quiet. So when we do the tours, we try to tell people like this isn't TV. We may have a lot of activity or it may be really quiet and we're just kind of talking to ourselves. But yeah, we've met a lot of great people through there and have been able to share the paranormal and educate them just from them coming to our public investigations.
Yeah. Let me just see where all my questions are. Who do you think haunts it?
That's a loaded question. So because we come across some spirits that we feel like are regulars, right? They kind of answer things the same way. Their energy to me feels the same. And that's been a couple of the servants there, the caretaker, the original overseer, Mr. Lee, was not a pleasant person at all. We feel could show up, but you know, at the end of the day, do we know if it's really them? We don't.
Right.
But it's like the same energy kind of comes through. But then we have a lot of random. We have like a lot of, I feel like they're just pass-throughs or people that, you know, we bring our own loved ones, or, you know, our guests bring their loved ones too. And it's on the river too. So the river, I feel, helps with the energy of why it's so active. But, you know, could the river carry energy too? Like, but it's, you know, it has connections with Native Americans, the Rappahannock tribe for the last couple of years. They're not doing it this year, but the last couple of years have done their powwow on the land because that used to be a part of their land. So it has connections to so many different historical things that have, events that have happened. There's just a lot going on. Sometimes when it's slow, I'll play Native American drumming, or I'll play songs that they would have sung in the fields, and that will actually kind of amp up responses.
Would you say there, well, you said that it's hit and miss whether there's a lot of activity or not on, given the day.
Yeah, it's predominantly, I would say it's predominantly active, but can I guarantee you're going to have an experience? No, I can't. But for the most part, it's interesting because sometimes when we're not even, like, stuff happens all day, like all day, all night, doesn't matter what time it is. When I'm teaching there, the last time I was teaching a more advanced class, a student and I saw a spirit come through the room behind us and go into the kitchen. And about 2 minutes later, we heard a huge crash and we heard two of the workers scream. And we were like, what in the world was that? They were in the kitchen and there was a mantle there and a plate on it levitated and threw off and shattered right in front of them to the point where they were like, what happened? So a lot of times when I'm just teaching, things will happen. I've had the doors. They love opening doors. During investigation, Jeff Belanger, and it's happened with me too in the library, we'll have the door shut and you will hear the doorknob like, and then, and there's nobody there. He sent me his video where he videoed it during Sage Paracon. I think it was last year, and it's just clear as day, like they're trying to open the door. So they love opening doors there. I've had them open in the basement. When I was teaching one time, the door opened and we all looked and I was like, hello. We got up and looked and there was nobody there. So yeah, I mean, I would say it's pretty active. But you know, there's those days too, just like with the Hinsdale, it kind of like it's active and then things are kind of like, okay, we're done. Like, we're good.
Yeah. Okay. I know we're at time, but I just have a few more things. Do you still have a little time?
No, yeah, I'm fine.
Okay. I know you mentioned it earlier, but tell me about the Cabin on 360.
Yes. So the Cabin on 360, Dennis Eslock runs that now. So that's another location I highly suggest if you're ever in Virginia, let me know, because I've got places to take you to. But the Cabin on 360 is somewhere that I grew up actually nearby. And again, Civil War, Native American. A very traumatic event happened on this location as well. And there's two houses and then there's the woods behind it. And I can say every time I've been there, it has been very active. The brick rancher next door in the basement, that's the first time I've ever come across an elemental. I didn't even know what they were at the time. I'd never communicated with one. My dear friend Tyler, him and I do really well doing the Estes together. So he's doing the Estes and I'm asking the questions. And as he's underdoing it, I'm asking the questions and I started realizing, okay, what I'm talking to is not male or female. What I'm talking to has actually never been a human at all. And like, so all of this is going through my head and I'm like, okay, I don't know what this is. So let me kind of back out of it. But after the fact, I'd kind of gone in with my guides and asked them what it was. And they told me it was elemental. So there in that location can get kind of heavy sometimes. Like that can really zap you. So I go there when I'm able to. But yeah, definitely the elemental. Well, and Dennis had mentioned Pukwudgie, that it could be a Pukwudgie too.
Okay.
So yeah, so it's like we really don't know for sure what that is down there. All I can tell you is that I go and treat it with respect, and I've never had issues because
and
I
that's the. That's the basement that you were like, eh, and reminded you of the Hinsdale house,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So because of my experience there, I was like, because this is what spirit does for me. They use a lot of my previous experiences to let me know what's going on currently. So okay. It'll kind of give me a heads up of that's what I was like feeling. I was feeling the basement at the cabin and I was like, And then Tawny said she was actually picking up on two of them down there. So I was like, yeah, I'm just going to stay up here. It's late. I'm tired.
And Tammy and I are like, here we come. Where's the Pukwudgies?
Yeah. And then we get back to our Airbnb and Tammy and I didn't sleep the whole night because it was haunted.
It was? No, I don't know this part.
Oh my God. You got to ask Tammy. Tawny was out like a light. Tammy and I, she kept having more of the visitor in the room. I kept hearing the footsteps in the hallway. I think I got 2 hours of sleep before I had to get up and go to the Buffalo Airport.
Oh my gosh. Well, it was probably better than the Holiday Inn we were in because it was, Elizabeth literally had to like karate kick her door just to get it open because it was like,
oh no.
Crack in her wall where she could see daylight through it.
Oh no. Yeah, it was better than that. I'll deal with the ghost.
Water damage. Like she was what is happening here? The first room, she got her key and it wouldn't even open. They couldn't even get the door open. Nobody could. So then they're like, here's another room. And then they had to karate chop that door to get it open.
That was the first sign.
I mean, my room was better than that, but it was still this was the most rundown Holiday Inn. Yeah, it was it needs some help there. Okay, and then I wanted to talk to you about St. Albans Sane Asylum.
Oh yeah, that was another good one. So St. Albans Insane Asylum is in Radford, Virginia. It was originally built for a boys' school, I believe, like a boys' disciplinary, like boys' school. And then it transitioned into an insane asylum. And I was so nervous to go because being a medium, right? Like you're going into an insane asylum. I was like, I don't know. I just don't know. I've never experienced it before. It made me really nervous. So I actually came up with the code word with my spirit guides. If I heard the code word, I was going to leave the room I was in because I never want to put myself into a situation that I don't need to be in. Right. So that place, I did learn my lesson too. I learned that I will never open up as a medium in those locations either, because when I did, I connected with somebody who did very not good things to little girls, and it made me feel disgusted. And and so because as a medium, when you blend, you're feeling their energy, you're feeling their thoughts, you're feeling their. And when I started to feel like I wanted to like stroke a little girl's hair, I was like, absolutely not. We're not doing this. I did connect upstairs with the women of that used to be raped and they were impregnated. So I was able to tell their story. So that was kind of like a, you know. But still, and in that location, that was the first time I have ever come across what I can say is like a crawler. Have you ever seen one of those?
Nope.
Look, so Dead Fouls is my favorite like paranormal show. And I used to joke with my husband. I was like, I'm so glad I don't see the things Amy Allen sees, because the things that she would describe, I'm like, ooh, I never want to see that. I saw that at St. Albans. We were walking through the main area. It was John in front of me and my friend Rhonda behind, and just kind of like walking through, going back to like home base. You know, they usually have a room where we all go and meet up and stuff. And we're just walking through and I look up and above me, what only I can describe is a human torso from the waist up, but its legs look like spiders and it was on the ceiling upside down and it was crawling. Yeah. It was crawling past me. We were going this way. So we were literally just passing each other. I don't even think it saw me. I didn't say anything until we got back into the room. And I said, so why? And my friend Rhonda said, yeah, I saw it too. And I was like, you saw it? And she was like, yeah, I saw it too. And I was like, what was that? And then we told John, who had been there numerous times before us. And he said that that's actually a claim that they get a lot. A lot of people in that room see the crawler. And I don't know, from what I felt from it, it was created because of all the gunk there, all the energetic gunk. It's like created from all of that. I don't know if it feeds off of it still. I don't know. But Bridget, it was one of those like, okay, I'm good. I saw that. I don't need to see that again.
The only place I've heard of that before is at Waverly.
I haven't been there. So in November, been there either. I'm doing Trans-Allegheny in November. So I'm a little nervous about that one too, but I'm not going to open up as a medium. I'll just go through psychically.
There used to be somebody from Trans-Allegheny that would message me and be like, you have to come here. You have to come here. This was way back when like Twitter was our main form of social media.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to, but obviously I never got there. But I wonder if that person like just gave up on me or if they're not part of it anymore.
Right. I'll let you know how it goes. I'll let you know.
Yeah, let me know. Yeah, because yeah. I have heard a lot about it. Okay. I know this isn't going to be a quick topic, but I do want to ask you about reincarnation.
Oh,
because you said you've been going down like a rabbit hole with it, but yeah. I love reincarnation. I totally believe in it.
So I'm going to be in Sage Paracon in a couple of weeks at Belgrove through MJ Dixon. And when she asked me, like, this is my third year, and I was like, I want to do something different. I want to teach something different, go, you know, and so reincarnation came to me. It's always been something I've believed in, but totally going down that rabbit hole. So the University of Virginia actually here has a reincarnation department. And so that put me down. Yes. And so that put me down the rabbit hole of finding all these books from professors that were connected to this department. And one of them was Michael Newton. And I started reading his books. And Journey of the Souls is the one that totally sucked me in. But so he's a hypnotist, and he would have, you know, patients or clients come in, and he would start doing these past life regressions. And he started to see similarities in all of their stories and all of their experiences, and started documenting them to the point of, in the book Journey of Souls, he kind of takes you in from what happens and what happens in between. So like what happens in between us coming back and then before we come back down. And what's fascinating with it too is what I've learned from spirit just in my own readings. It was validated reading his book. Like reading it from somebody else's perspective or experiences with what I've experienced in my head through just spirit was like, oh my gosh, this really is a thing. And so when we were in Lilydale on Saturday, Tawny's like, look, I don't need your help Saturday during my class. If you want to go do whatever you want, like, you know, go do it. So I was like, awesome. So I looked for, I'd never really taken any classes at Lilydale. And so I looked to see what was going to be there because it's different like every weekend or during the week. So lo and behold, that Saturday, there was a all-day workshop with Greg Unterberger from 9:30 till 4:30. So he had trained under some of these people, and he does the past life regression hypnosis. So I got to sit in there all day Saturday and experience it. We went down, you know, he kind of like, he follows Edgar Cayce a lot. So he referenced a lot of things with Edgar Cayce because Edgar Cayce's readings would hit on the reincarnation a lot. And then we went to lunch and came back, and Bridget, he walked us through it was like a hypnosis, like a guided meditation, but it was like meditation, but under a little bit. Like I was still conscious, but I was definitely kind of keyed into what he was saying to us. And I didn't know how long we were under, but I know I started to hurt because I have a lot of metal in my body. So I was like starting to get a little antsy. He brought us out and we were under almost 2 hours. And just during that little session, it was crazy. And just during that little session, I was able to do, he took us back one past life. So in just that one past life, the most previous one, I was able to pretty much find out like why I'm here now and like what my purpose is and what I'm here to learn and accomplish. And it was pretty life-changing.
So
I really want to dig into it more. I'd love to get trained under him. He does trainings throughout the year to be certified and walking people through that too. I'm waiting for that kind of opportunity to cross my path. But for Sage Paracon, I'm going to do a talk on what I've learned, and then our workshop, I'm going to do a past life, like a Akashic Records meditation. So teaching them kind of go to the Akashic Records part, but it's just fascinating and it's beautiful, and it kind of resonates with, you know, like you said, you were interested in reincarnation. It's like always kind of known there's something more. There's just something more going on here.
Yeah. Well, I want to do the past life regression too. In fact, when we were in Lilydale, I was like, oh, you know what I should have done? We were just walking around. I was like, I should have looked and seen if anybody does past life regression here. And yeah. Elizabeth said, oh, I looked it up. There is one person here that does it.
Oh.
Which, and I was like, oh, well, next time I should like try and book that. Obviously it was too late now as I'm walking around in there, but I was like, I should try and book that next time I go, because Holly did a past life regression and we knew each other in another life, she said, but she doesn't want to tell me where or what, because she wants me to do it and then compare.
Yeah. Well, Mike and Michael Newton's book, he talks about how we have like soul families, right? So it's those people that you meet in life and you're like, you just click, like you're just like soul family. And he said that predominantly the people in our life that are part of our soul family are our best friends, are like the people that are closest to us in our inner circle. It's not predominantly like our parents, like you might think it would be. It's our friends and those that are like in our very, very much inner circle that we're around all the time. They are probably more than likely part of our like soul family, our soul circle.
That's so cool.
Which makes sense. Well, if you start to think about it, yeah.
Yeah, I could sit here and talk to you all day. Yeah. Well, I'm going to let you go. But so thank you so much for sharing all your stories with us. Tell everybody listening how they can come and see you at Sage Paracon, book a reading if you do those things, like all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, sure. So Sage Paracon is Belgrove's website. So it's www.belgroveplantation.com. And so on there is all, and if I do events there, all the info is on there as well. My website is www.kimsage.info. And on there is like all my stuff, booking. I do have Patreon too. So I'm really focusing on building an online community and having that safe space for others to step out of their comfort zone and learn. So I'm really kind of putting more energy into that and being able to help others grow their abilities too.
So you do accept like appointments online and that kind of thing?
Yes, I do. Yep. It's all virtual. Like people ask all the time. I used to have an in-person office, but now it's just through Zoom. And they're like, is the connection the same? And I'm like, absolutely. It's the same energetic connection as you and I are talking. So yeah, I do.
Amazing. All right. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of the Ghost Bunny Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me on my spooky adventures. And I look forward to sharing a new ghost story with you each week. Please subscribe to my podcast so you're always the first to know when a new episode is out. And follow me on social media at Ghost Bunny Podcast on Instagram, at Ghost Bunny Podcast on YouTube. That's the video version of the podcast. And patreon.com/ghostbunny for spooky tours, investigations, and more content. Thanks, guys. Mwah.
Hi there, my name is Annie Elise, aka your true crime BFF and host of the podcast Serialously. I have been a true crime enthusiast forever, but I wished somebody would break down the cases for me like a friend, giving all the details and discussing every twist and turn. So I decided to create a podcast that does just that. Serialously with Annie Elise is topping the charts with over 1 million weekly downloads. I do the deep dives in these cases so you don't have to, diving into all the raw details, saying what we're all thinking, and in a conversational way, just like having a conversation with your best friend. So join me and let's talk all things true crime. Serialously with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.